Blog Talk Radio.
On October 30th, 1990, a young woman by the name of Cynthia Lorraine Ricketts Richardson was executed and dismembered by her husband, Donald Glenn Richardson. Her body parts were scattered over a 50-mile area in and around the Columbia River in the state of Oregon. As if the abuse Cindy suffered at the hands of her husband wasn't enough, the state of Oregon delivered its own brand of injustice to not only Cindy and her family, but to a second family as well. That is, when Donald was released from prison after only a 25-year sentence for his heinous crime against his wife. When Donald was released due to a new law that had been passed by the state legislature, he committed a crime so horrible it should have earned him the death penalty. Sadly, he will be released from prison in 2023. The family has fought for years to keep him in prison even before he was released the first time. This is Cindy's story. This is finally the justice she nor her family ever received at the hands of the criminal justice system in Oregon, from the attorney general down to the psychiatrist who stated that he was not a danger to others. While he was awaiting trial for Cindy's murder, his defense attorney stated in court that it was just a garden variety murder. Now Cindy can rest and her family can find the peace that has eluded them for so many years. Justice for Cindy by Yvonne Mason, available today on Amazon and Barnes & Noble.
Gentlemen, it is Friday night, July the 7th, and this is Off the Chain. I am your host, Yvonne Mason. Yes, that was a piece of shameless promotion. That was my true crime justice for Cindy. And tonight's show is about domestic violence, and this is what happened to Cindy. Her husband told the entire neighborhood and anybody who would listen that he was going to kill his wife. Nobody paid attention. There were red flags everywhere. And he did indeed not only kill his wife, he executed her while she slept. Then he dismembered her body and threw her in the Columbia River in the state of Oregon. So tonight, my guest and I, freelance writer and author Mary Brotherton, and my childhood friend, who I absolutely adore, and retired cop from East Point, Georgia, or College Park, can't remember which, Ron Gregory, and myself are going to discuss domestic violence. And one could say that the three of us are experts. Mary and I both are survivors of domestic violence, me for 18 years. I was too stupid to get out of it when I did. I had this misguided notion that my children needed their father, and I had made a commitment to my marriage, and it almost cost me my life. Sadly, Cindy also felt that way, and it did cost her her life. So let's get started. A little background on Mary. She's a writer, tour editor, photographer, an actress, a mentor, and she's a founder of My Own Writer's Salon. She's a Navy mom, a grandmary, tea and chocolate connoisseur, and my friend. She is a reader, a writer, an editor, and a recovering HANC. Pollyanna with a darkness, an introverted extrovert. She's a social butterfly emerging from the cocoon. And Ron is, I've known Ron since, God, I can't remember when. We were in many classes in school together, and he's always been one of my favorite people. And through the years, we lost touch, and thank God for social media because we reconnected. And I found out he did work for the police department. So he's had his own share of dealing with domestic violence. So without further ado, welcome, guys. Thanks for coming back on.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Well, it's my honor. And before we get started, I have to do two quick things. One, I have to brag a little bit because, ladies and gentlemen, we are at 14,742 listeners just on this show. We're 258 listeners away from 15,000 listeners just on Blog Talk. This is our anniversary month. July the 27th will be our first year anniversary, and y'all have made it. My guests like Mary and Ron and my listeners, y'all are the reason this show is successful, and I am so, so proud and so, so humbled and so appreciative. And ladies and gentlemen, we are 4,189 listeners away from 30,000 listeners with all the podcast.
Congratulations.
So, thank you, darling.
That is absolutely
it's
awesome.
It's because of y'all. Let me do one more thing real quick. I promise these guys, they're two new sponsors to the show, and if I don't get them in, they're probably going to haunt me in my dreams. Author Darian Cox, he has a book called Don't Let the Enemy Steal from You, A Crown of Thorns to a Crown of Righteousness. Don't let any man, anything, or any situation in your life ever steal the things that God has ordained for you to have. One of the great things of my generation that I see, one of the great things that breaks my heart, is I see a generation that has no idea of the destiny and the future and the hope that God has for our generation. I look at young people in hopelessness. There's so much. We have the cars, the entertainment, the lights. We have everything the world could offer a generation, and yet there's never been a generation more unhappy. So, ladies and gentlemen, get this book and read it. I think you will learn some things from Mr. Cox. And in some ways, he's right. We put stock in everything material and not things spiritual. And then we have this cute little book by Diane Mote. And every time I read her ad, I get tongue-tied. She has a little book, and it goes like this. Pepper Neely, Pet Sits, Magical Animals. And the first of the series, The Supernatural Pet Sitter, The Magic Thief, someone begins stealing the magic from Pepper's animal friends. She has to find the magic thief before the magic thief finds her. The Supernatural Pet Sitter by Diane Mote is now available on Amazon as an ebook and paperback. So, ladies and gentlemen, you're going on summer vacation, you have some wee ones, or you're on summer vacation at home and the wee ones are at home, go get this book and read it to them and let them get their tongue tied and you get your tongue tied while you're reading to them. It'll be a hoot and a half, I promise. So now let's move on to tonight's show. Let me just give the definition of domestic abuse, ladies and gentlemen. And most of you think, oh, my spouse, my mate, my partner does not abuse me. Well, one of the questions that I have to ask you is, do they embarrass you in front of other people? Do they tell you that you're stupid? Do they make fun of your cooking and not in a way that you both understand? Do they ask you when you'll be home from an errand or how long you're going to be gone? Or where you're going? Do they ask you who you're with? Not that some of these questions are not just good manners, but if you go to work in the morning and they know it takes you 20 minutes to get to work, and as you walk in the door and sit down at your desk and they're calling you on the phone every morning, that's a signal. If you're supposed to be home 20 minutes after you get off work and you're caught in traffic and you walk in the door a minute and a half late and they start grilling you, that is abuse. And it will escalate, ladies and gentlemen. Trust me. And the first time they hit you and they say, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to, it'll never happen again, yes, it will. So with that being said, Mary, in your situation, would it be fair to say that some of those things that I just talked about are true?
Almost all of them. In my situation, I'll be honest, there were times that I would go to bed and I would pray that he would hit me so that I could prove that I wasn't crazy, because I felt like I was being abused and I felt like I was being entirely mishandled. Prime example, what Mr. Cox wrote about. I only became a writer, a professional editor, after I left him and could follow my own dreams. I allowed him to stop me from believing that I was capable of anything more than being whatever he wanted me to be. He chose my friends, would have chosen my family if he could have. He did his best to estrange me from my family. Didn't believe in my dreams, didn't support my goals and wishes, constantly embarrassed me in front of anybody he could, but it was just a joke. It was always just, oh, I'm just joking. She knows it. I'm teasing. It didn't feel like teasing. I never felt that I was good enough to be anybody's anything, much less his wife. Whatever I did was not good enough, fast enough, strong enough, pretty enough, smart enough, or nice enough. And then I didn't know what it meant to have someone love me unconditionally, other than my two sons, until I got away from him and found someone else who supports me completely. And, you know, there's nothing that I can do wrong. I mean, I make mistakes, but it's not the same kind of, well, you should know better.
It's, oops, so, we made a mistake, we'll get over it and move on.
Right. People, they think abuse has to hurt physically, especially women. They believe that domestic violence, domestic abuse is a physical, like child abuse.
Uh-huh.
And people can abuse their children with just their words. If you demean another person or make a person feel less than they're capable of feeling, then that's abuse. Cheating on your spouse is a form of abuse.
Yes, it is.
It is an abuse of someone's trust, an abuse of a promise that you made. And not just your spouse, if it's a boyfriend, girlfriend, if you live with someone or you have promised to be a dedicated partner to someone and you don't mind cheating on that person, that is a form of abuse.
Did you find that... I know in my own personal situation that I always knew when the abuse was going to happen, even before it happened. Being an empath is a scary thing, ladies and gentlemen, and I am an empath because I know things. And the buildup, and there's nothing, it's like watching a train wreck. You can't do anything to stop it because if I call the police, now this was in the 70s and the 80s, if I call the police, they would just, and Ron, I know you're a retired cop and you'll know where I'm coming from. Cops don't like to answer domestic abuse calls because they never know when it's going to go south. So if I call the police, that aired a dirty little secret, for one thing, that I didn't want out there because I was raised in Georgia and you just didn't do that. And I didn't want my children exposed to it because my ex-husband was great about anonymously calling DFACs and telling them what a terrible mother I was. That was another way to keep me under his thumb. And the beatings, you get over the bruises. You get over the broken bones. even though I have lasting damage, but you never get over the emotional and mental abuse that is heaped on you like hot coals on a fire. And after a while, it tears you down to you really don't care whether you live or die. Mary, is that a true statement?
Absolutely. I can't tell you how many scenarios I would come up with on my way home from work every day, because I knew that I was going to get the fifth degree. I was going to have the Grand Inquisition. And like you said, if you come home late, you better have a real good reason for it. And it better be something that you had to prove it. And you know, in my current relationship with my current husband, you know, it is not uncommon for me to walk out the door 15 minutes before he's scheduled to come home from work because I forgot to pick up something for dinner. And I run to the store and I get it and I come home maybe 15, 20 minutes after he comes in, and he'll look at me and he'll say, "Well, where were you?" And he's got this big grin on his face, like, "I know you've come back with something special for me."
Exactly.
And so, he said that little, you know, it's a joke between the two of you. But in my first relationship, I had to make sure that I planned those kind of spontaneous, oops, I forgot to have milk for the morning breakfast or whatever. Or I needed to pick up some butter to go on his bread because, God forbid, you should forget the butter for the bread. And if I was not home before he was cooking in the kitchen, I didn't get a, "Oh, where were you?" with a smile. It was, "Where the hell have you been?"
Mm-hmm. What'd you do all day?
Who were you with?
Yep. Now, Ron, I want you to weigh in on this, on the fact that going into a situation. And I hope and pray that every time you went on a domestic abuse call, you didn't go by yourself, that you took a partner. Because
90% of the time I went by myself.
Well, see, and sadly, that's when cops get killed, ladies and gentlemen, because the victim, 9 times out of 10, and Ron, correct me if I'm wrong, 9 times out of 10, the victim will turn on the cop even though the victim is the one that called the cop.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
So
that is so true.
So give me a typical call when you get that call and your stomach hits the ground and you're going, "Oh, shit, do I really want this call?"
Well, you know, we had the ones that we got continually. We knew what the situation was in the home, and it was like, it's Friday night, we're going to get that call. But there's the one that you get there, and you walk in the door, and the husband is on top of the wife, literally beating the living daylights out of her, and you're witnessing this taking place. You rush over by yourself, grab him up, pull him off of her, get him down on the floor trying to handcuff him, and next thing you know, she's on your back, beating you in the back of the head, hollering, "Let him go, let him go, let him go." And that's a scary situation to be in.
Yeah, because you're defenseless,
you know.
Basically.
Well, yeah, and it's like, well, I'm trying to save your life, and now you're trying to save him from going to jail. And you're the one that made the call to the police to come to begin with. So, you know, back in those days, it was confusing for a young guy who was 24 years old, you know, trying to understand what the mindset is there. But as police, you wanted ideally two officers, because the way you were taught in the academy was, as you get there and you separate the two parties and you start questioning them, but you keep them within sight of each other. You don't want to go into the room with a wife away from the husband. That's something you don't do.
Because that would create a whole different problem.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And you would question them to see what's going on, and then you would switch off, and you'd go do some questioning, and he would do the same thing, you know. But when you're in a small town, like when I was in Riverdale, for instance, back in the 70s, you know, you might be on that night by yourself, and that's it. And if you can't get to your radio to call for some backup from the county, you could be dead.
And what makes it so, ladies and gentlemen, what makes it even worse is, and we're going to talk about understanding and things to do, but what makes it worse is if they do take the abuser, whether it's male or female, to jail, the victim will go and bail them out, and then when they get to their first appearance, all the charges are dropped because the victim feels like they can't live without them because the abuser has convinced them. And Mary, correct me if I'm wrong, because this was, again, speaking from my personal, my husband never went to jail, but he convinced me that nobody else in this world would ever want me and that I would be so ugly by the time he got through beating the crap out of me that nobody would ever want me. And so
Eva,
they go get him.
I totally agree with you on that, because what I find in my limited experience is typically, whether it's the man who's doing the abuse or the woman who's doing the abuse, because women also abuse men, but the person who's being abused has become so wrapped up in protecting the image, perfect lifestyle, and you become a codependent on their rage and their other issues, whatever they might be, that when you think you've had time to think about, my own example, the day that I moved out of my ex's house, I it took me, the first couple of hours I was very excited because I was going on a new adventure. I'm starting my life over. And then when night came, I thought, oh, shucks, how am I going to do this?
Yep.
I've never been without him. As an adult, I had never been without that man in my life. What if he's right? What if I am too stupid? What if I am too ugly? What if I am not good enough to live without him? And it took me a couple of days to really get my head right. It didn't take me a long time to recover from that doubt, because I put myself through college as an adult with two kids on an academic scholarship. And I stayed on the dean's list. You don't do that if you're stupid.
Exactly.
You don't do that if you're dumb. And I find that a lot of women in these situations are a lot smarter than we think we are. And we need to prove it to ourselves so that we can prove it to them. But by the time we get to that point of, I'd like to show you how smart I am, if we are really smart, we've moved on, and they don't matter anymore.
They hold no power. Ron, let me ask you this. When y'all were able to get an abuser in front of a judge, and correct me if I'm wrong, weren't the laws so lenient at that time, and in some places still are, that the judge slapped the person on the hand and sent them back home? Either that or the wife stood there crying and wringing her hands because she has all these little stair steps trailing behind her, and he's the only breadwinner.
I never saw a conviction. What I did, and the most that I ever saw, Yvonne, was them to say, I'm going to dismiss the charges if both of you promise to go into couple therapy.
Now, that's laughable.
Well, it is, because they don't do that.
No.
And they walk right out of the courtroom, and that's it. And now the person who's been abused before knows that, why should I even have him locked up? They're not going to do anything to him. There's no sense me even calling unless I'm calling because I think I'm fixing to die, and that might keep me from dying.
And that brings me to another point, and we were talking about this before the show. If someone goes, if an abused partner, and ladies and gentlemen, I'm using that term because this happens in same-sex partnerships. This happens in heterosexual partnerships. It happens. So let's say the abused partner says, okay, I'm going to go get a TRO, and that's a temporary restraining order, ladies and gentlemen. So they go file for this TRO. That's supposed to keep the abuser away from them. Well, Ron, in your experience, what happens?
Well, what happens is they end up making contact with the one that's been abused, and they don't report it. And then once you've done that and you've allowed them to come back, and it's just like you file for divorce, you spend the night in bed, you know, that shoots down the restraining order. You know, at that point, I mean, they don't utilize it.
And or,
it doesn't keep the abuser away anyway.
No, because if once the abuser is served with this restraining order,
it
more times than not, it pisses them off, so they still come after they're abused.
Makes them even madder to where they don't even care at that point. I mean, you know, you're exactly right.
How many bodies did y'all pick up because of domestic abuse?
Well, I never had one that was deceased, but I have had them go to the hospital in pretty bad shape. But, you know, I can't begin to count how many required, you know, medical care, but a good number of them, and some of them were the same person over and over again.
Now, if that were a child, and Mary, we all talked about this before the show, didn't we, Mary, that if that had been a child that had happened to, the schools, the ER doctors, social services would have gotten involved. And, yes, people, you can say, well, this is an adult. Yes, it is. That being said, that adult is not in a cognizant frame of mind to be able to make rational decisions based on what's happening to them because of the abuse. Mary, would that be a fair statement?
Absolutely. Because what happens when you're being abused in any way, whether it's physical, mental, emotional, or psychological, you're in self-defense mode. And all you can think of is, how do I make myself invisible?
Yes.
How do I go away? How do I make myself I either have to be perfect so that he has no fault with me, or I have to be invisible so he just can't see me. And when you're doing that, you are so wrapped up in a psychotic soup of craziness within your own brain, trying to make every, and then especially if you have children at home, the younger, the worse the case is. You wonder, wow, how do I make this work so that they become invisible too? And it's really hard to be the one who says, hey, I'm hurt here. This guy hurt me. Put him away. You're not thinking of putting him away. All you're thinking about is, how do I go away?
Uh-huh.
I can't tell you how many times I've come home from work thinking, how fast do I have to drive my car to hit a tree so that I can be put in the hospital and my kids can be with me, but I don't have to see him anymore.
Exactly. And ladies and gentlemen, you also have to understand that abusers are narcissistic sociopaths. Nothing is ever their fault. And while they give lip service to remorse and apologies and I love you so much, it's all bullshit. They don't mean any of it. All it amounts to is they want to manipulate the abused because it gives them a sense of self-gratification, of power, and of being in control all the time. Once that power is taken from them, the abused is no longer a victim. The abused becomes a survivor. But the person that is abused has to get to the point that they are strong enough to walk out that door, and no matter how smooth talking, and Mary, I know you know what I'm talking about, and Ron does too, no matter how smoothly they talk to you, and no matter how many times they say, I'll go and get help, I promise I will go and get, if you'll just come back and give me one more chance, I'll go and get help, and I'll never do it again. When somebody tells you that, run like the hounds of hell are after you. Ron, would that be a true statement?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, I don't know how many times, you know, I've had them say, but he's a good man, and he takes care of the kids, and he provides a good home. But, you know, even though they know this is happening to him, but he takes care of the family, but he provides good, you know, and so forth and so on. And the abusers are the ones that are loaded with the, you know, with the low self-esteem of themselves. You know, they're trying to satisfy their inadequacies.
Exactly. Weigh in on that, Mary.
Well, I think that they loathe and hate themselves so much that the only way they can feel worthy of their, they can't even begin to feel worthy of their own self-love. So they have to bring you down to their level so that they can feel they have a commonality. They have to make you hate yourself as much as they hate themselves.
Actually, I think they want you to hate yourself more. I know my ex-husband did. He wanted me to be so totally self-loathing that I depended on him for my self-confidence, self-worth, and self-respect.
Right.
I just wish that people could see the warning signs early before they get too involved in a relationship. We had a situation just this week. I had a friend, and I was sitting there while she was talking to a friend on Facebook in another state. The friend messaged her on Facebook and told her, we're not going to be able to talk anymore. My boyfriend / fiance has told me that I can't talk to any of my old friends anymore. I'm going to have to get rid of them, all my old friends.
Oh, poor girl.
And, of course, that's a huge red flag right there.
Yes.
And she would actually, when he would walk in the room, she would unfriend this person. And then when she walked back out of the room, she'd refriend her again on Facebook so she could tell her. And I told her, I said, I'm telling you, you got to try to get your friend to get some help. I know she's out of state. I don't know what you can do. I said, the next thing is he's going to tell her she's got to quit her job.
Uh-huh.
You know, because if she doesn't want to, you know, you can't be around your friends. You can't have your old friends anymore. You can only have my friends. And that's a way to contact to make, you know, so he's going to make sure he cuts off contact altogether. Eventually, you need to run for the hills.
Before it's over, he's going to tell her that her own mother doesn't love her as much as his mother does.
Exactly.
Wow, yeah.
That was things that I heard for 25 years. His mother loved me, but mine didn't.
And if in my situation, what my ex-husband did is he tried to alienate my children from me as a way to keep me under his control.
Yeah, I'm much closer to one son than I am the other because of the way the ex-husband treated them. You know, he made sure he had an ally.
Uh-huh. And ladies and gentlemen, if you are in a relationship, and even if it's just beginning, there are warning signs. And one of the warning signs is, like Mary said, when you're in a crowd of people, and your partner makes snide comments that hurt to the quick, like, oh, nobody else will have her, so I took her on. and everybody laughs because they think it's funny. It's not funny. That is a very not so subtle hint that your partner is gearing up to alienate you, to tear you down, to destroy you as a human being, and to make you totally dependent on them. The first time you walk into your home and they say, and they're looking at their watch or their iPhone, and they're going, "You should have been home 6 minutes ago. Where you been?" You need to pack your shit and get out. Right, Mary?
Yvonne, exactly. I've got a question for you about your situation.
Yes, ma'am.
Did he try to control your wardrobe?
That was one of the things he did not do, because I was in corporate America, and I always dressed in business attire, and then when I was at home, I was in jeans. So he did not try to control my wardrobe, but he really tried to control telephone conversations.
What about
are you
hairstyle?
Talking, Mary, are you talking of the provocativeness or the lack of provocativeness in dressing?
I was never a provocative dresser, but I always liked to wear bold colors. And he wanted me to be like the wallflower that hid into the background where nobody would see me.
That's what I thought you were going to say.
Uh-huh.
He wanted me to look like an Amish woman, maybe.
Yeah.
He'd have been very happy as a Muslim because then I'd have had to wear a burqa. But he wanted to control the amount of makeup that I wore, how I wore my hair, what kinds of shoes and clothing I wore. And really and truly, a lot of our problems, when I started feeling like I was having a problem in the marriage, is when I started asserting myself by wearing the clothes that I wanted. That, I mean, there was no, it wasn't like I was trying to be provocative. I just wanted to be me.
Right.
And if that meant that I wore a blue and, you know, a blue shirt and a green pair of pants, that was okay with me, but he didn't think that was right. Everything should have been neutral colors of brown or not even like a snappy navy or dark, like a black pinstripe. It couldn't be anything corporate. Oh, no. It had to be just very camouflage.
You couldn't have any individualness.
Yes.
Yes.
She had to become part of the furniture.
Yep, mm-hmm. yep. I was white background noise to him.
He never tried to control what I wore, but if I ever got on the telephone with my family or friends, he would sit there and not that I cared that anybody listened to my conversation, but he would sit there and listen to everything I said, and then he would interject things. And after a while, it got irritating because I was having a conversation with someone else. If I wanted to have a conversation with him, I would have a conversation with him.
Exactly.
And he would tell me that he would make it so that nobody else would ever want me. Well, he almost succeeded because of him, I am now very cynical, an extremely closed person, and, of course, the trust issue, well, there is no trust. So, but I want to thank him for many things, and one of those is because he helped me to become cynical and helped me not to trust people and helped me to always look for the hidden part of people. I'm pretty damn good as a bounty hunter. So I want to thank him for that.
I'm never going to do anything for you to come after me.
Jesus.
Because I'm tenacious. I don't give up. That's why I'm successful at what I do.
I don't want her to catch me, and I don't want to wind up in a book. So...
Well, you know, my ex told me that my writing was a nice hobby, but that I should give it up because it just wasn't lucrative. I make a living with my words. And you know, I'm not making mega millions, but I don't need to make mega millions because the words that I write make a difference.
Exactly. And getting back, and I'm going to pimp justice for Cindy for just a minute. Getting back to Cindy, when people read her story, it is such a writing that book. I cannot tell y'all how difficult. And I write true crime, but writing that particular book took so much out of me because I could have been Cindy at any time. I could have been Cindy, and looking at her story through an objective lens, because I am now away from it, I know who I am, I know where I'm going, I know how I'm going to get there, and I know I'm worthwhile. That makes Mary and I both survivors, because we know who we are. Cindy never knew who she was, because he took that from her. And 500,000 women a year, 500,000 women a year are killed because of domestic violence.
That's
and those
many.
Are just the ones that are reported.
That's 500,000 women. That is way too many.
Yes.
Now, is that in this nation or worldwide?
It's in this nation, just in the United States alone.
That's unacceptable.
And
there's
leaves.
Probably a number that's not even reported as domestic abuse.
Exactly.
I mean, that's that's something that's reported to NCIC, this and that, crime reports, you know, crime statistics. There's
mm-hmm.
probably a large number that just, you know, that don't get reported like that at all.
We got
exactly.
a case right now. Got a case right now down in South Florida, down on the at the other end of us, where this man and his wife were on a catamaran, went to Cuba. He sent out a distress signal. They found him floating in a dinghy, and she's still not found. He said he went to sleep below deck, and he woke up and she wasn't on the boat anymore. Really? And the boat sank.
Yeah, that's a bit of
that's
a coincidence.
A little bit too convenient. And
yep.
he came and got his child from her family. Now he's in England where he thinks he can't be touched.
Right.
A little bit too convenient. That's one of those mystery statistics, Ron, that we were just talking about.
Yeah. Well, you know, do you remember Bob Matthews?
Yes.
From school?
Yes.
Well, Bob and I had lunch yesterday. You know, he retired as a detective in East Point. He was uniforming in a detective. And we were talking about the show tonight and about all this stuff that went on. And we were talking about the crimes that went unreported. Also, too, the good old boy syndrome in these sleepy southern counties and towns where, you know, the old boy is a good old boy, and, yeah, he beats his wife up occasionally and this and that and whatever, but you know what? We're not going to do anything about that. And people think that's 50s and 60s South and this and that. No, that's 2017 still. That stuff still goes on.
And 9 times out of 10, they say, well, you know, he's a good old boy, and she probably deserved to be smacked around a time or two. She probably popped off at him.
Exactly. Well, let's face it. In the 1800s and early 1900s, woman didn't say anything. You know.
Exactly.
I do genealogy stuff and used to look at the state prison in Milledgeville when a husband in the late 1800s got tired of his wife. Guess what he did with her?
Put her down in Milledgeville.
He had her committed.
Now,
put them in an institution.
Because, Mary, remember they said when women had a postpartum after childbirth that they were in a bad way, so they stuck them down there. When women would read a book, ladies and gentlemen, they would put them in Milledgeville.
Yep. They were doing things that weren't normal. Must be something wrong with them. They went through menopause. You know, they were crazy.
Well, I was pretty crazy when I went through menopause, but that's another whole story.
Yeah, but you were not that kind of crazy. But
well, I've been crazy. You've known me a long time, Ron. I've been crazy a long time.
Yeah, but that was a common thing. And,
it was a
you know,
common
you may
thing.
Think 100, you may think 100 something years later it's changed, but it hasn't changed as much as it should have changed.
And that brings me to the next point, and I'm going to start with Mary. And the next point is there is a lack of understanding of people, whether it's men or women, or children, ladies and gentlemen, who are victims of abuse. There is a lack of understanding, and whether it's intentional or non-intentional, I don't know. I don't know if people put on blinders and think that if they pretend like they don't see it, it's not happening because they don't know how to fix it. Mary, that lack of understanding, would you agree, impedes solving the problem?
Absolutely. And I can give you an example from my own experience. The day that I left my husband, my first husband, the first thing that I did is I went to my mother and I sat down with her and I told her that I had left him. And she said, you know, your dad never liked him. And that was pretty much the conversation went on beyond that, but that was my takeaway. And then I called my 7 brothers and sisters. And I told them each the same thing. You know, I've had enough of his abuse. I am gone, and I don't intend to go back. Well, the older brother and sister who never really lived with, they had already moved on with their lives when I got married. They never really saw me in a social situation. It was always family when he was on his best behavior, family, big events. They were shocked. They were really surprised. My youngest sister, who had actually lived with me and him for 4 months, said, it's about damn time. And when I told my youngest son, who was 19 at the time, I'm moving out. I'm not staying here anymore. He said, Mom, can I come with you? I said, absolutely. He said, because I'm not staying here with this man if you're not here to buffer us. He said, he'll turn on me like he's turned on you. I had no idea that my son knew this. I thought that I was the best actress in the world. I had kept my secret sacred from everybody else because I didn't want anybody to know that I had married a man that couldn't love me unconditionally. And because of that, now I didn't know that he was abusing me. I just knew that I wasn't happy. And when I got away from him, I started doing some research and I started talking to people. And the more people I talked to and told them, you know, well, I'm divorced. I'm not married to him anymore. I've moved on. Most everybody that knows me in my current life have no idea anything about my first life. That they know me in Florida, they don't know me from South Carolina, and everything's so much better. But until you know what those signs are, you don't even know that you're being abused sometimes. It's very subtle. It starts out, and I'll give you a real good example. Mine started on my wedding day. He insisted that I needed a wedding gown with a train on it.
And so I got a wedding gown with a train on it. That was like a leash. He said, I'll hold your train for you at the reception. That meant that he could be right there with me. My train never touched the ground. He was the self-designated train holder, and it might as well have been a leash and a collar around my neck because he was establishing his territory right then for the entire world to see. But if you
that
don't
know... That is an interesting observation.
Yes.
If you know that's what's happening, you think, oh, isn't that romantic? Look at him holding her train for her. But there are a lot of things that look like romance that are really manipulation and control.
So
and
there's
so
your lack
I,
of understanding.
Exactly,
you know,
a lack of
people
understanding.
People see that as a cute thing on his part, and in reality, it's just another way to control.
And I can't tell you how many people thought that he was whispering sweet nothings in my ear when he was actually in the public insulting me. And I think it's important for people of every gender, of every stage of any relationship to, you don't want to think everything's abuse. You don't want to say, oh my God, he's abusing me. But you want to be aware, you want to know, and you want to, you want to be armed with education and knowledge. And it might think, this is my theory. If it doesn't feel right, it's not.
And if it happens more than once, it's a pattern.
Exactly.
Y'all are not going to believe this, but we're going to run out of time here real shortly. Again, we do this. Ladies and gentlemen, this happened the last time, too. We ran out of time before we ran out of advice and sage words because all three of us are very passionate about this. And before the show, we were discussing about celebrities and sports figures getting on the bandwagon, but then once the next big thing comes along, this falls by the wayside. This is something I lived with for 18 years. Mary lived with it for a number of years. This is something that I strongly believe in. And if I am out in public and I see someone who I feel like is being abused, you bet your sweet you-know-what that this old 67-year-old white woman will step in. I will not walk away because nobody deserves to be abused. And if a man tells you she's my wife and I can hit her if I want to, well,
no, you can't.
Exactly. No, you can't. So what Mary and I are telling you, number one, if it happens more than once, it's a pattern. That's a red flag. If it happens subtly and all of a sudden you're going, something's not right, hit the door. There are safe places that you can go to. All you have to do is go find a cop. They'll take you there. Call a friend. Call a parent. Call a child. Call your neighbor. Call somebody. Get out of it. Because if you don't get out of it, you will wind up dead. I promise you, you will wind up dead. Your children will be without a mother. Your family will be without a sibling and a child. If you don't wind up dead and you don't have that inner strength that Mary and I had, you will wind up a shell of a human being, and we will have lost some of our future. And trust us, ladies and gentlemen, when we say this is generational, Ron, am I right?
It is generational. It's fathers pass it to sons. You know, I mean, if you grew up in an abusive family, your odds are so high that you're going to be an abuser yourself or you're going to be abused. You're going to be one or the other.
And
I would say if you're a young girl growing up and you see your mother being abused, you're going to think that that's the way you're supposed to be treated.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And it is not. And let me tell you, ladies and gentlemen, I know this from experience. My youngest daughter saw what her father did to me. And for years, she was in an abusive relationship that I could not get her out of. And because of it, she lost her children. So trust us. And ladies and gentlemen, this is not just an epidemic in the United States. This is a worldwide epidemic. And I know that we have over 70 countries that listen to us. So I'm telling you, if you are in an abusive relationship, if it happens more than once, it is a pattern. If it happens more than three times, it will never stop. If you want to, go ahead, Mary.
Yvonne.
Yes.
Something I wanted to say. You know, when you and I were youngsters in middle school, if we came home and said, Mama, there's a boy in school who keeps poking me with a pencil, or there's a boy in school who's pulling my pigtail, what was her answer?
Oh, they just like you.
That is not how a boy shows how much he likes you.
No. We needed people like my friend Ryan Gregory that was a true Southern gentleman. And I've never
Mama
told
Rachel
you.
Like that.
Yes, you were. Ladies and gentlemen, Ron never failed to open the door. Now, we were kids. We were 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17 years old. Ron never failed to open the door for female counterparts. Ron never failed to pull a chair out. Ron never failed to let us go before him. And he always treated us with dignity and the respect that we deserved as females. And he did that with his male counterparts, too. So it doesn't matter the sex. It's the way you were raised, and it's the moral compass that you have. And in order to have that moral compass, you have to get out of that situation. Am I right, guys?
Absolutely
right. And I'm going to go out on a limb here and tell you, if your religion condones this kind of treatment, you need to be away from that.
Amen.
Hallelujah.
Because true unconditional love, ladies and gentlemen, and I'm going to go with Ron out on a limb, true unconditional love is you treat your partner the way that you would treat yourself. And I know, unless you're into self-mutilation, that you're not going to do that to yourself. So we're going to end on that note. If you are now a victim of abuse, become a survivor. You can do it. We have done it. Mary and I both are survivors. Ron has seen survivors. And know that there are places that you can go to get help. Be true to yourself. Be true to your children. And have your own. Yes, ma'am.
I'd like to go on out on my limb and say, if you don't know if you're being abused and you don't know where to go for help, reach out to either me, Yvonne, or Ron. We're all on Facebook. You can find us there. You can reach out to Yvonne by commenting on her podcast. Do not be a victim, because
and we will be absolutely discreet.
Yes, we will.
Absolutely. Because a lot of people don't know that they are being victimized. They don't realize that they're being abused. And if you want to clarify it, reach out to us. We will be happy to talk to you about it.
Well said, Mary, and thank you for bringing that up. We are now getting to the close of the show, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, it was a heavy show, but it's something that I will continue preaching. And, yes, I'm going to bring these guys back after the first of the year, and we'll have this conversation again. We're going to keep having this conversation until we make a difference. Tomorrow night at 8 o'clock, if y'all will come back, we'll keep having it. Tomorrow night at 8 o'clock, actor Mike Marino will be my guest, so join us. And as I always say at the end of the show, if don't just feel special, be special. If you want to achieve greatness, stop asking permission. Your smile is your logo. Your personality is your business card, and how you leave others feeling after having an experience with you, ladies and gentlemen, that becomes your trademark. So I thank my guests tonight for their input in this. And this
thank you for the forum.
There you go. This is Yvonne Mason with Off the Chain, and until tomorrow night, we say good night. Y'all hang on just a minute.
Okay.
Now, we're off the air, but everything we say is going into archives, so when I put it up, all this will be in archives. But this hour went by so fast, and we still didn't cover as much as we needed to cover, and I really want... I'm going to keep bringing y'all back until we make a difference in one person's life.
I like that.
And you know what,
I think
that would be great if you would. I know there's a lot of stuff posted, but if you can post on your page, go down and think of those symptoms and think of that, you know, the things that people don't think about, the little things that we talked about tonight that are symptomatic.
Uh-huh.
Maybe list some of that stuff and say, you may not think this is important, but if this happened to you, you need to think about this situation.
Well, what I'm going to do is I have a blog about domestic abuse. I'm going to post that with this podcast.
Good, good, because I can share that too. I didn't realize that.
Yep. Do what, Mary?
Also, if you know somebody you think might be a victim of abuse, ask them to pass the link on to them.
That's a good idea. And when this thing goes up, after we get off the phone, when this thing goes up, I'm going to tag both of y'all in the link, and then y'all
awesome.
Pass it along too.
Well,
and,
indeed.
And then tomorrow I will put it up in the 5 podcast if this thing runs off of. It runs off Mixcloud, SoundCloud, Spreaker, Podcast.com, and Podcast Garden. It also shows up on iTunes, YouTube, FM.com, Stitcher, which is heard on Sirius Radio, and TuneIn Radio.
That's a lot
Very
of
good.
Media.
Plus, there's Odd and End podcasts that other people put it up on that I don't even know until I go looking and just seeing where it is out there. And this thing is popping up everywhere. So we're getting the exposure, and with the 70-plus countries and the 25,000-plus listeners, we're going to make a difference one way or the other.
If we can just save one more woman like Cindy.
Yes, I agree. So let's say we revisit this in February. That'll give y'all time to get some more talking points. I'll tag y'all in the link of my blog, and we'll just make this a regular thing every 4 or 5 months until we start getting feedback or we save a life.
Yeah, we didn't even talk about Bill Cosby tonight.
No, we didn't.
I think the three of us.
You think what, Mary?
I think the three of us make a really good team.
Yes, we do. And I'm thinking that when we do it again, maybe have an open forum. People can call in at any time. I should have said that tonight in the live show. Maybe run the show 1.5 hours and give out the number, and y'all help me promote it, and people can call in to ask questions.
I think that's an excellent idea.
That's a great idea.
All right, that's what I'll do. We'll set this up for February. I'll send y'all the dates. We'll run it for 1.5 hours. I'll send y'all the link for the blog. I haven't posted in a long time with everything else that's been going on. And then when this thing goes up in archives, I'll tag y'all in it, and then I'll tag y'all in the podcast, and y'all spread that around too.
Perfect.
Okay, gang. We're off and running. Thank y'all so much for.
Well, do me a small favor when you get a moment. I'm gonna be in Florida next month.
Yeah.
I don't know how far down I'm gonna be at that point, but private message me your personal cell number.
Okay.
You
I
know,
can do
and
that.
if I get down that way, Donna and I may give you a call.
I wish you would. That would be fun.
I know we're going to be in St. Augustine during the hottest part of the year. But
that's three. When next month are you going to be in St. Augustine?
Like the 11th, 13th, 14th.
Because that's the weekend I'm going to be in St. Augustine.
You're kidding me.
No, we have a JCI Senate meeting that weekend. It's the third weekend, right? Or is that the
yeah.
second week?
Well, that's her birthday is the 13th. So we were going to be down there for that.
When I get off from here, I'll see exactly when it is. It's either the third weekend of August, or it's that, I'm not sure, but I'll send you the dates.
Okay. Well, that'd be great, even if we could just see you for an hour, that'd be wonderful.
It'd be fantastic. And Mary, we'd get Mary to run up there from Melbourne.
Oh, Mary, I'd just love to meet you in person.
That would be awesome. I'm not sure I'm going to make it because I know the 13th is my stepson's birthday. So I'm not sure what we're doing. He's turning 25 this year. Crazy.
Well, I'm going to make it down your way one of these days to when you have one of your fundraisers down there. I'll make it down that way.
All right, gang.
We're doing it in August. But, yeah, we'll definitely have to meet up, the three of us.
Yes.
And, God, it won't last just an hour, Ron. You know that.
An hour wouldn't work. An hour won't even work on the show.
I'm just very grateful that we know each other.
Yes.
Me too.
Go ahead, Mary.
I said me too. I'm just very grateful we've been introduced.
See
well,
how things
thanks.
Work
now,
out?
Now it's going to get mushy, so, you know, don't.
All right. On that note, I'm going to say good night, John Boy.
Good night, Mary Ellen.
And I'll get this up to you and Ron. I'll send you the dates and I'll send you my phone number.
All right. Thank you, guys. Love you guys. Thanks so much.
Love y'all too. Bye bye.
All right. Have a good one. Bye bye.
All righty.